Well, welcome to Take Care. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. You did a great intro to PT there. Usually it's not quite as comprehensive.
And we would like you to fill in some blanks for our listeners and for those of us who haven't had to go to a physical therapist. What happens? You go to a doctor and they diagnose aches and pains, or possibly you've had surgery and they say, okay, well, here's a prescription for 6 to 8 visits to physical therapy, and then they see you. When you meet with a patient for the first time, how do you determine what treatment plan will be most effective for them?
Well, I think we got to back up a little bit. The modern physical therapist is a doctor of physical therapy, and that degree has been out for well over 10 years now. In most states, we have direct access, so we don't necessarily need to see, or a patient does not need to see a doctor first, meaning they can just come in off the street and their insurance will cover it. I'm a cash-based PT, so I don't worry about those things anymore. But before I became a cash-based PT, I saw 75% of our patients in the practice I worked at were self-referred. So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, that you need to see a doctor to see a physical therapist first, or an MD, I should say, or a DO or podiatrist.
Well, you're absolutely right, because I've been to physical therapy and I always thought insurance would only cover it if you went to a medical practitioner first who had to approve you to get the treatment. In other words, you had to justify your injury and your need for physical therapy before you actually got to go to one. So I am happy to hear that that's not the case.
Yeah. And I can't speak for every state, but in at least 47 to 48 states, there is almost full direct access, if not partial direct access. Some insurance companies may differ. Some insurance companies, for example, don't accept referrals from dentists. Like they say, for TMJ or TMD problems, you may have to have a referral from a primary. So I can't obviously speak for all the different variables out there, but I don't want patients to think they need to have that step, because truthfully, in terms of the diagnosis that the physician gives you, there's research that shows that if you get the right diagnosis from the right provider, that actually hampers your prognosis. For example, if someone tells you you have a herniated disc, so you get a CAT scan or an MRI, research shows that between two groups who had similar physical therapy education, exercise, and treatment, and one group had an MRI, and one group did not have an MRI, can you guess, based on where I'm getting at, which group ended up doing better in the long term?
So you're suggesting that with a diagnosis, you fail because that's what's expected of you. You're not going to do as well.
It's not even that you fail. It's just that the group didn't do as well. And patient expectation has a lot to do with how well you do in treatment. And because of Dr. Google, and I think all the things that resources that patients have available to them, the savvy consumer may end up with a lot of bad news. Between that and probably well-meaning but negative support from family members or friends, like, oh, you have a herniated disc, I had that, or my aunt had that, and they had to have surgery. And so you go in expecting the worst. So when you don't have all these misconceptions about what physical therapy is or what your condition could entail, I think those patients end up doing better. It's called the nocebo effect as opposed to the placebo effect, which is a lot of people think means fake, but placebo does not mean fake. It means you have a positive expectation of an outcome that doesn't have to do with what they're particularly studying.
So for the person who's never experienced physical therapy, let's go over what it is. Because some people may think, oh, it's just exercises. I go in there and I learn to work with a stretch band or a ball or whatever. But it's multi... It has various components attached to it. I mean, you will work with somebody and you'll see their lack of mobility, or you'll see their pain level, and you'll adjust a program to for them to achieve improvement. So what types of therapies are used typically, and what have you found to be most effective?
Well, in general, what's supported by research, first and foremost, is education. I mean, if you're too afraid to move, or you've seen various providers, you've been told that you have a slip disc, or your hip is bone on bone, or you have a disc pinching a nerve, and again, you have all this bad news and all this weight that's essentially on your shoulders, I need to educate that out of the patient. I need to tell them that it's okay to move, that the pain it's based on perceived threat, and it's not often related to what's seen in an X-ray or a CAT scan, because there's numerous studies out there that we can cite that show that up to 87% of patients who even have disc herniations but are completely pain-free, that's seen in as early as the ages of 20 to 30, you know. So if that's 87%, that's high enough to be considered normal. So you know, every single little piece of education that I give people tells them that it's okay to move, pain is a natural response. In many cases, your brain is detecting threat. And once we kind of alleviate that threat through education and reducing anxiety and fear avoidance and kinesiophobia, then we get them moving. And in terms of getting them moving, that could be anything from corrective exercises to strengthening to hands-on techniques. Because in the end, hands-on techniques, even though my brand is the Manual Therapist Online, I've come to teach my seminars, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I would say that most of my seminars were based on techniques. You're going to learn to manipulate people. You're going to learn to do soft tissue work, and that's going to fix someone. Now, in modern physical therapy, we learn that manual therapy is just a means to kind of prime the nervous system to get ready to move, to decrease the fear, and then it's up to the patient to keep the improvement. Because whether it's manual therapy, ultrasound, exercise, eSTIM, those are all kind of passive things to help you feel better and feel better as you're moving. But if you don't reinforce it as the patient, it's not going to last for more than, you know, a couple hours or so.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And our guest today for a discussion on physical therapy is Dr. Ersin Religioso. He holds a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree and is an expert in manual therapy. Now, Dr. Religioso, you mentioned that there are some temporary things that are a fix, but unless people are educated, they won't be able to see long-term improvement, which then they can maintain on their own at home. What are the types of things that might come into, in other words, someone comes into your office, and I know in some cases physical therapy involves the application of heat or ice or electrical stimulation. Is that part of physical therapy typically?
Yeah, I mean, I would say those are very, very common physical agents or modalities that are used in most practices. A lot of the PTs that kind of follow me online or who consider themselves manual therapists, we just use those as adjuncts. The thing is, if you go to PT and all you ever do is the same exercises, or your PT hands you an exercise card, and you get maybe heat, ultrasound, and eSTIM, that's kind of what we call shake and bake physical therapy, you know. And whether it's physical therapy, chiropractic, massage therapy, or even in medicine, there's the bell curve, right? And if you're at the top of the curve, you're just going to get what the average patient would get. But if you're to the right of the curve and you see a more modern, well-educated physical therapist, they may do those passive treatments, but in the end, it's always to get you to a point where you can treat yourself at home. Because the goal is to be able to treat yourself. You shouldn't need us, or you shouldn't need palliative care like a massage unless you just want it to relax. You shouldn't need it for maintenance. Very few conditions need maintenance care, you know, week after week after week.
Many people live with chronic pain and are told surgery is their only option. And you alluded to that earlier with your example of working with different doctors and having tests done. But I know you have helped some people, and I know other physical therapists have helped people avoid surgery and lessen their pain considerably. How have you been able to do that? And what are the conditions that have presented to you in your office and the patients? What, in other words, what are the conditions that physical therapy might be able to help and help the patient avoid surgery?
Right. Well, I mean, I think the surgeries that most people are looking at here are probably low back surgeries and lumbar surgeries first, followed by neck surgeries and then knee and shoulder. But in general, the way that standard medicine works is you have the gatekeeper, which is your primary, and their job is to essentially rule out whether or not you're dying. You know, because if you're not dying, you don't have cancer or something serious like a fracture that doesn't require immediate medical or surgical attention, then they may send you on to an ortho specialist. An ortho specialist is going to say you might have a sprained strain, some sort of inflammation or spasm. They may prescribe meds. So you end up playing this waiting game, and in the meantime, you may also have to wait for your insurance company to you know, authorize an X-ray or CAT scan. So there's all this various levels of what the traditional medicine does for pain. And again, they're coming at it from the standpoint that you're dying first. They have to rule out all these dangerous kind of, you know, sinister conditions. And then after a while, eventually you may make it to a PT. And that's why, you know, we really try to push public awareness of our direct access, because there's no side effects to what we do, you know, other than maybe soreness. And potentially we might flare up your condition temporarily if we push you too hard or we remove you the wrong way. But in the end, all flare ups end. So, you know, in terms of conditions, again, it could be anything from headaches to facial pain to jaw pain, because I'm a TMJ specialist, so I saw a lot of that. Neck pain, shoulder pain, knee pain. I mean, pain anyway. I used to just tell patients, if it hurts when you move, have a PT look at it first. Because if we tell you you need surgery, you may really need surgery. But if a surgeon tells you you need surgery, you know, if you see enough surgeons, surgery is going to be the only thing that happens. Because the only thing they can offer you is really a shot pill or surgery.
What should a patient look for when choosing a physical therapist? What questions should they ask? Is the approach of the physical therapist available online? And I know sometimes people give advice that you interview the physical therapist first. And I'm just my own opinion. It's very difficult to do that. You know what? People are busy. You're getting an appointment. And it's very awkward to try to sit across from somebody and ask about their approach. So what kind of advice do you have as a behind-the-scenes person so that when you have a choice of a physical therapist, and I think legally you do have that choice, I know, in New York State, what should a person look for?
Well, absolutely. The funny thing is legally you do have the choice. And even if your doctor says you have to go to Clinic X, you still can go wherever you want. Because even once you have the prescription, and let's just say you actually have an insurance company that says we're not going to cover X condition unless you have a prescription, that's fine. But no one can tell you where to go. It's only a prescription for a service, not a prescription for a particular location. You know, if a clinic is too busy for an interview, that might be one indication. But my advice were to be, if your doctor gave you a list, or even if you asked online or through your social media circles or just people you know, who would you go to? You're going to end up with a list. You can always visit the clinic. And if you see a therapist spending anywhere between 10 to 15 minutes of quality time with someone, that's as much as you're going to get in a lot of these managed care clinics. And that a lot can be done in terms of one-on-one time for 10, 15, 20 minutes. But if you see a therapist kind of run around, you know, like a chicken with its head cut off with supervising, you know, 5 or 6 patients, if you see way more patients in the clinic than there are actually staff, that might be a place that you don't want to go to right away. Certainly these places are all getting people better, but, you know, what I always tell people is if you're used to going to PT, and many people have had PT, where they talk to people and they say, yeah, I just get exercises, you know, they walk in and say, hi, I get my exercise sheet and I kind of go in and start exercising. I say, that's like going to the hairstylist and, you know, them handing you a blow dryer and saying, here, and here's some shampoo. Why don't you go wash yourself first and, you know, I'll get to you when I get to you. In the end, it's still a skilled one-on-one service. You know, I do half an hour to an hour, but a lot can be done in 10, 15 minutes. But you don't want someone who schedules themselves 4 to 6 people an hour, because that is a kind of a standard, unfortunately, in some practices.
Dr. Erson Religioso holds a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree, is an expert in manual therapy, and is an adjunct faculty member at SUNY Buffalo. Thank you so much for your expertise on this topic.
Oh, yeah, no problem.